Welcome to Unsigned Hype episode 21. On this episode, I have the pleasure to talk to the incredible artist Mahfood from Germany. Prior to our interview, I asked Mahfood which song he would play for someone that wasn't familiar with his music yet. Mahfood chose the song Uganda Shift, and if you're not familiar with Mahfood's music yet, here's a snippet of that song before we jump into the interview. This is Unsigned Hype. The song you just heard is called Uganda Shift by Mahfood, who's joining me from Portugal today. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to the show. Mahfood, why is Uganda Shift the song you would play for someone that has never heard your music before?
I would play the song to someone who never heard my music before because it is a very jazzy song that was inspired by my journey through Uganda. And it was coming from a moment of exercising certain ideas on the piano and studying certain concepts, jazz concepts on the piano that I immediately tried to translate into a body of work kind of. And it was part of my album. So it was very interesting to me to just apply the things I've learned and experienced right away in the studio. And since it's not always possible to do these things for several reasons, it was quite a unique moment. And I feel like I translated that quite well. And it's not something that happens all the time. So, and it's one of those tracks that people haven't heard of a lot. It's like a little bit of a hidden gem for me on my album. It's kind of buried, I think, below like 10,000 plays or something. But it's very fun to play. It's very fun to play live, which is like one of those components that I think a lot of producers also have to take into account. Like, how do I actually play all these productions and all these ideas and all these tracks? How do I play them live? Right.
So you were mentioning it was inspired by a trip to Uganda. Was it also recorded over there?
It's really funny because I did record a few elements there, like field recordings, and I did go to a few tribes that had, you know, like a lot of big collection of wooden instruments and drums and flutes, and, you know, they were doing specific dances. I forgot the name of the tribe, but I'm sure it will come to me. Karamajong. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I did record some things there, put it into the track. And as I was working, it was kind of like this texture in the background. But I removed it in the end. I really don't know why. I felt like it didn't fit in anymore, but it was kind of guiding me the whole time, throughout the whole track. But, I think it was just a matter of mixing, these elements together. And then once I took it out, it just felt very balanced and very well mixed. And I was like, okay, you know what? Let's just take it out, and keep this a bit cleaner. Because on the album itself, I use a lot of different recordings, samples to create textures. And that one felt a bit less noisy in the end and more peaceful. So, yeah.
And you were mentioning the process of you recording that song. Can you elaborate a bit more on that? How you usually approach recording a track? You know, you were mentioning something, I'm not sure if I can repeat it as accurately as you did, but this idea of not recording it immediately or like taking some time in between, maybe having an idea and then recording the song. Like how does it usually work for you? How do you take an idea and put that in a song? What's the process usually like for you?
I think it depends on the idea itself. For example, let's say I just have an idea that I played or discovered on the guitar, then it's much easier to bring that to life and, you know, plug it in, record the basic structure and then keep building on that. But let's say I have a melody in mind that was inspired by something more orchestral or, you know, backed up by a bigger band or something that requires more energy than you can just keep the basic idea, maybe on a piano or a keyboard, quickly, just like to not forget or to memorize. And sometimes it sits, you know, it sits in your idea box for years, because like it's so easy to have ideas all the time. For me, at least, I think a lot of people can resonate with that too. Ideas come or not, but you can't really force it to happen in the moment you need it most. I feel, at least for me, when I sit in the studio and I just try to come up with ideas on the spot, most of the time it doesn't work. So then I can just reach back into the drawer and see, okay, what are the ideas I have here that I didn't work on yet? And then sometimes I feel like, okay, that's kind of vibing right now. So I take it and build on that. So there are a few songs that I definitely finished only years later. But Childhood, for example, one of the tracks that seems to resonate with people most, was a matter of 90 minutes between coming up with the idea, recording it, and finishing the whole arrangement. It was super quick.
You're mentioning Childhood. It's actually your first song that surpassed the million streams, which is, you know, some artists say, you know, numbers is obviously not something to focus on all the time, but hitting a million on a streaming service is a big deal. What's your explanation for that, if you had to put your finger on it? Why it's that song out of all the songs that you've put out that resonated with people so much?
I really thought about this thoroughly. And I had this conversation with my girlfriend not too long ago. And I think one of the biggest reasons for it is that it just flowed naturally. And I think people that listen to music can't put their finger on it, why they like something, but overall there must be a certain level of flow or natural connection. And if the composer or the creator of a piece really feels their own creation and feels the process and feels natural and authentic and pure in that process, then that literally translates into the audience ears. And that emotion is something that makes music so magical, because we can't put our fingers on why certain recordings vibe so hard and others are so distant, or feel distant, or maybe feel so unrelatable. Like I think it's all about relating. And it is a composition that came out of a real emotion of missing my home and missing my origins and my roots. So it wasn't something I did to like impress or to fit into a box or to, you know, adhere to a hype or to a trend or to a certain sound that people expect. And all that is quite, yeah, I feel like it's adding to a very interesting process that I would love to carry on to more pieces and more compositions.
Yeah, and we're going to get into your heritage and your background in a little bit as well. But something I just remembered when we were talking off camera before we started the recording was that you, with some tracks, you don't really understand why people enjoy them so much or why they've hit the streaming numbers that they have. And I think you mentioned Childhood is also one of them. So you, in your opinion, do you feel like there's other songs that you would rather have seen more streams on than this one?
Yes and no. So I think it makes sense that this one took off more than other songs, you know, for a variety of reasons. One of them would be just the mix, the instrumentation. It's all things that people can relate to. People can relate to instruments and simple melodies, you know, or let's say a wider audience can relate to that. When you experiment, it is an amazing escape for yourself. It's like, oh, I just want to record and experiment and not have any boundaries. But it's sometimes hard to follow from the perspective of an audience. And people want to be able to maybe either sing along or maybe remember the melody, and then just sometimes it just takes a grip on you, right? And just the melody keeps repeating in your head. And it's very short. It's like a 3-minute, 30-second song. So people are not, they kind of can listen to it from beginning till end without being interrupted. And the other pieces sometimes take 8 minutes, maybe 7, 9 minutes or whatever. So it's like, it's not an edit that caters the needs, let's say, of someone in a hurry in the morning or whatever, you know? So it's like, I think practicality perspective. But this again, it shows how technical these things would be if one was to really pay attention to them, you know?
You know, hitting a million streams is not something that happens immediately right when you put out your first song, and your journey actually started quite a long time ago. I think one of the first pieces of music you shared with the world was a cover, an acoustic version of Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson. Can you take me back to that day when you decided to record that version?
Man, you dug deep, huh? Oh my God. Wow. Yeah. So, my God. I remember that phase of my life very well. I think it's really funny because when it was the time of living in the Netherlands, and I remember that when I moved to the Netherlands, I thought my entire music life will be over, you know, because I...
Why?
Well, because I came to the Netherlands to study social sciences, and I thought, okay, there's no way I can continue my musical path here. University is going to require way too much of my attention. It just didn't seem right. And my parents never really wanted me to become a professional musician. So they were always guiding me towards academics and university studies. And they said, you know, if you manage to study music, that would be great, you know, but it has to be connected to that education component. Just because like a degree of that level, will facilitate and facilitate your life, or your professional life and open much, much more doors.
Just a quick side question. So you going into, you starting university, you already have in mind that a career in music is kind of what you essentially want to go for. That's your dream scenario. Well,
yeah. So fun fact, but this is something I'm sure we will talk about later. So I applied for a music academy / university in Germany, which is called Pop Academy in Mannheim, before I moved to the Netherlands, and they didn't accept me, right? They didn't accept me. And then my mom was like, okay, so you tried and now, you know, maybe it makes this decision easier for you also to study something, less in the realm of performing arts, but more pick something. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll study in English. I go to the Netherlands and I mean, it's really interesting how things fall together when you least expect them to. And I really believe in this sort of like certain degree of destiny where you will face a lot of challenges to get to the point where you want to be, because it will test your will on the way constantly. It's like, yeah, sure, you want to be a musician. All right. But it's not going to be, you know, that path that you expected, because that's way too easy. You know, we will, you know, life will make sure you really keep on, but it's really important to face these challenges, because that's ultimately the only way to grow and to really shift gears and study harder and you know, learn the essential things you need. Because probably had I been accepted to go to the school in Mannheim, I would have never faced any of those crazy challenges, you know, be it emotional, be it on a personal growth level and all that. When I recorded this cover, it was just me in my room with a little USB microphone, a very shitty guitar, and just singing my heart out, right? It was like that time where I was just literally gathering all my friends in the living room, and we would just make music until 3, 4 a.m., just playing, and not being worried about tomorrow, basically.
And how does that develop? So how do you balance the dream of having a career as a musician with day-to-day studies and pursuing a university degree? And when does this thing of you playing music with friends in the living room become, you know, a serious thought of, I want to make money out of this. This is what I want to pursue for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never felt like I had a choice. You know, I never felt like I wanted anything else. I tried it all. I really did. I when I went to university, I was sitting with my fellow students in one room during the tutorials, and I could just not, for the love of God, sit in this room and listen, you know, to what people were talking about. It was just impossible for me. I know it caused a lot of problems, because it was such a hard decision to make to finally say, no, I'm really like turning my back to this, and I'm really pursuing like music studies and go deeper into jazz studies and really wanting to become a professional musician. But I didn't call myself a musician the first 2 years that I was in Holland, you know, even though I was making music and organizing jam sessions, I never called myself a musician. I remember that one day when I started befriending more artists from Holland, you know, because none of my friends was an artist or a musician. I didn't have any reference points. So all I had was people giving me a hard time because I was not showing up to the tutorials or not going to the lectures, or which they did out of worry and obviously out of care, you know, so it was always coming from a good place. But I started meeting people from the business school. I started meeting people studying a variety of studies, and it opened my horizon. And then I started meeting people from the conservatory and the art academy. And, you know, you're very much aware of the culture of this squatting culture in Holland at that time. So I started understanding, grassroots movements more. I started understanding what it takes to, you know, to be part of a community, and how important it is to not only consume, but also create and provide a certain level of experiences. And then slowly but surely, I started seeing or having more visions and more perspectives in how life would be as an artist. And then only then I started calling myself a musician, because then I started really investing my time, full time, into creating, studying, learning, practicing, and performing music. And I think that was the turning point for sure. I really remember then addressing a lot of my fellow artist friends how important it is for us to kind of stick together as artists and create some sort of communities where we maybe create some joint ventures, let's say, you know. So I don't know. Hey, let's maybe if you start an exhibition with your work, we could have this guy take photos. We could have this guy document it. Maybe somebody can play a bit of music. Yeah. So I started realizing that. But this is something I would like to highlight. I was making really like the least amount of money ever. Like I remember that I was paying everything in cash. Like I was paying my rent in cash. Sometimes I was $5 short on just paying my rent in cash. So it was not like a financially rewarding time at all. It was actually quite tough, but yeah, that was the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. I totally see. First of all, I do remember that community very well. Also, you know, I think you working with Daniel van Houten, for example, and I mean, a bunch of other people that we can mention here that were kind of part of this community. And I love this idea of everyone kind of helping each other to pursue their dreams and aspirations and like the creative field. So I totally can relate, or not relate, because I'm not a musician, but this idea of becoming a musician eventually by letting everything else go and fully focusing on your craft and getting better. And, you know, something that I love to see with you building this career was also showcasing your heritage, which we mentioned earlier a little bit, your Middle Eastern roots. You know, it's something that sonically is very much something that you make part of everything that you do. I know that on your debut album, for example, there's, I think on the first track, there's a really amazing sample by this Lebanese singer that you've used. And, you know, and then there's tracks like Aleppo. So there's always these references to Syria and where you're from. And, you know, obviously there's a motivation with that, because that's where you're from. That's where your roots are. That's a part of you. But I was wondering then, other than this connection to you as a human being, what other motivations you have to make your background such a strong part of your artistic self?
That's a very beautiful question. The answer to this question lies in my experience in moving to Germany from Syria as a child, and how it happened and the process of that. And what's really, what's carrying a very intense feeling for me is that I could never really explain this sensation to anyone, not even my siblings, because they were born in Germany. So of course, it carries a certain level of trauma within, but I only learned that later. So in that time, I was trying to numb that sensation with escapism, be it expression through art, being nightlife, and also, you know, having any sort of fun with friends that would kind of distract me from this identity crisis. And going to the Netherlands opened a lot of doors, because I met a lot of people that had a similar experience. So I felt like, okay, finally someone understands what I'm trying to talk about. But when I was living in Germany, being Syrian wasn't a common thing that people were confronted with. You know, when I told people I'm from Syria, they wouldn't be able to point it out on the map, right? Only in 2011, when the war started and there was like this huge wave of refugees coming from Syria to Europe, people started understanding that Syria is a country, Syrian people are people from the Middle East, and they're in trouble. So by that time, the image of what it meant to be Syrian was already completely distorted by war, by trouble, by, you know, more identity crisis and refugees. And it was not what I wanted to identify myself with. And I felt like my country was, or the country I was born in, I can't even say my country because I didn't have these connection points. But I felt that our culture was so much more, and being a Christian minority in Syrian was so much more than just people with no home or displaced communities. And that motivated me a lot to start to speak up and to start to also stand for something, right? Like it was actually a very empowering feeling to represent my people, or to represent my culture, my music, my heritage. And it made me very, very proud. And it actually gave me much more power to pursue music. And it gave it as much more, much deeper layer to communicate, to be able to represent my culture, my people, my heritage, actually gave me a much deeper, mission, and a much more powerful mission to represent where I come from musically. And it created a such deep layer and made it so much more worthwhile to be a musician and to provide, yeah, to be of service to something, right? And not only think about where am I in this world, where am I in this life, and how can I be successful with my music and all that stuff. So it's actually the worst, best thing that happened to me.
Yeah, it's for a second when you were describing this, it sounded a little bit like it was also part of a healing process for you, dealing with where you're coming from, moving to with your family to a different country, knowing what the people that are part of your heritage have gone through with the many, many years of war and crisis going on over there. This might not be easy to answer, but is there some form of closure that you're expecting from having put so much time and thought and creativity into this subject and connecting it with your music, that at some point you might say, I've closed this chapter of myself musically, and I'm going different directions now? Or will this connection with Syria and your music always be there, in your opinion?
Another nice question. This is something I've realized in my career so far, that I didn't really have a plan. I didn't really plan things out. I didn't really sit down and strategize and say, okay, the next year I'm going to focus on this. And I did a 5-year plan only when I started my company, just because I needed to write invoices and, you know, start becoming accountable financially. But basically, with you asking me this question right now, it's the first time I really think about it. But in hindsight, when I look back and I see how my well-being improved because I have an outlet, in a creative outlet, to really address things that matter to me, I definitely can see why people say that music is healing. Of course, not only to listen to music, but also to create to create music. And it's the purest, the most pure I feel when I'm actually working and creating music. There's no filter. There's no barrier between me and that actual process. So yes and no. I think I'm not expecting any closure from this. I'm not expecting any, like a moment where I start, feeling complete. I think it's an eternal process, which will always bring new challenges. And that's the beauty of it, because we're kind of like solving problems as human beings on a daily basis. And problems are not, sometimes have a negative connotation, but I think in my life, a problem is can be a fun challenge also to solve. And musically, to have a problem and to solve that can also be interesting, be it a new piece of gear that you need to kind of understand, but kind of always opens new doors also to express yourself. And I haven't been to Syria in a long time, right? And I've started seeing people organizing events in Damascus, like open air events, even dance parties. But I was supposed to play in Jordan in May. But obviously now with the current situation in that region, I think it would be both dangerous and also immoral to just go have fun. So there is definitely like this topic is ongoing, and I feel more and more called to create a platform for people to express and make their voice heard. So yeah, I do feel that maybe that all led to get into a new role, which is less about me, which is actually really beautiful, because I think we all know that our timeline as humans in the digital realm with social media is kind of like cultivating a very narcissistic and ego-centered culture. So to be able to be given that chance to be of service is actually quite a beautiful privilege in its own way, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think it's a beautiful message as well. This was Mahfoud's song, The Fear of Dying with Potential. And now back to the interview. Something that you mentioned while giving your answer was this idea of, you know, not having a plan as a musician and you not really having a plan or a fully thought out master plan, which reminded me of something, your trajectory as the artist Mahfoud and you wanting to start a new project called Sun and X. And this idea of you thinking that your artistic persona, Mahfoud, was not thought through enough for you to pursue it and then moving into a new project. So I have two questions with regards to that. First of all, what was missing and why do you think is it a good idea to let one artistic persona go to pursue another one, completely new one?
Again, a very, very nice analysis of what's happening right now. Cool. This is definitely a very important phase because I realized that in the beginning when I started, I was so tired of having to communicate with band members and to communicate with other people. I wanted to make decisions fast. It's like, I want this track. I want to produce it. I want to invite that person to come. Let's do it. No discussions, no second opinion, no meetings, no Zoom calls, no Skype or MSN or ICQ or whatever was there back in the days. I just want to go. I just want to get shit done. And also, it was because I was to a certain level, I was not musically not where I wanted to be. I wanted to learn much more. I wanted to understand much more. And I was kind of intimidated by a lot of the musicians I was jamming with when they would come to the session and you know, start doing their little jazz standards for 25 minutes and nobody would play one wrong note. I was like, how am I ever going to be part of a band? But I also realized that this aspect of multidimensionality, where everything feeds each other, be it your visual identity, be it the communication, be it the language you use, maybe also like what type of style you want to convey, your artworks, your trajectory as an artist. If you plan it out, you can go much further. And I think that process led me ultimately to really having to analyze what do I stand for? Like, as a musician, as a human, what do I stand for? Who do I want to be? Am I just going to be busy with myself and my own career? Like, maybe do I want to start creating value for other people that goes beyond me performing, right? Do I want to, what kind of events do I want to participate in? Where do I want to play? Do I want to become part of an industry that I actually criticize all the time because I think it's full of hypocrites, hypocrisy and consumption and all that? Or do I just want to get to the goal? And what does this goal actually encompass? And yeah, now with Sun and X, it's a very interesting project or an experiment where we go further in the sonic realm, let's say, where we can see how can we combine the electronic elements with the elements that derive from our experiences, individual experiences in soul, jazz, or songwriting, or folk, or country, or whatever you want to call blues, all these things that we went through. And yeah, that's where I feel I'm working on right now. And the reason for that choice or to bring all that together was also linked to not wanting to travel and perform alone all the time.
Is it easier to have other people be part of a musical project for you than doing everything by yourself? Or
it's actually more difficult. It depends on the structure, right? Like I've gathered a lot of experience in just by observing other people setting up projects like that. And I try to observe what made them successful or what made them fail, or at least how long they would actually manage to keep that project together. And of course, in a certain moment in time when people start having families and children and maybe second jobs, or it becomes more difficult to find time. But this is where my concept kicks in, where I think I never want to push my bandmates or my friends, in essence, because they are my friends.
It consists of three other people, right? Three other people that are part of Cinex.
Yeah. It's Mark Alberto, Mateusz Marszarek, and Roy Moon, all from old school connection from Holland as well. And I felt like the component of friendship is so essential in that project for me, where we come together as friends and we want to spend time together. We don't come together as people that need to work together. And that was the most important factor, where nobody felt pushed to be present. People felt invited to be present. And I think that is the spirit that I want to maintain, because I felt like when people expected me to be somewhere and it became super clinical and you know, it killed the creativity and it killed the creation process as well.
What does that mean for Mahfoud, the artist Mahfoud? You're part of the project, but to me it sounded like you were kind of giving that up, maybe you're not fully giving it up, but that you need to kind of detach yourself from Mahfoud in order to pursue another project.
I think they both can coexist. You know, we didn't talk about that, but I kind of ended up in this DJ world by accident. I never planned to become a DJ, you know, next to the things that I'm doing. So it was a cool phase for me to experience that side of the music industry and to see what's possible. But I didn't feel comfortable in that realm. At this point, I just wanted to start growing, because I feel that I couldn't use my new skills or the things that I tried to acquire and to learn. I could not completely expand these ideas. So with Sun and X, I can expand on those ideas, but I can also see what's not possible to realize in that realm. And I can just take these ideas and put them into my Mahfoud project again. And there it's like, you know, I can be a DJ, I can be a solo artist, I can do whatever people want me to when they want to book me, which is also easier. It's easier to travel, it's cheaper, and sometimes it's more spontaneous and faster if, you know, it's like, it's a bit more flexible than the band. The band requires much more resources, much more time. And we also want to create more special experiences with that band. So, yeah.
Going back to your debut album, I really loved that title, Fear of Dying with Potential. I do have to ask you, is that something that you consciously think about, the impact that you have on people? Is that something that you think about, this idea of you being really good at what you do and maybe not enough people getting to know this side of you and the music that you make?
I sometimes feel really, really bad if I don't go to bed and write down what I experience, or if there's a thought that I really need to get rid of. So there was a time in my life where I just felt like I wasn't doing that. And it felt like there was a certain potential. And especially when I was going to university studying something that I didn't really love, that there was a potential that I was not living up to. And, you know, if you feel there is a certain calling in your life, maybe that led you to start this podcast, for example, right? Like it also just didn't come out of nowhere. And if there are repeated signs that come to you and you just are forced to ignore them because the conditions aren't right or the setting is not the optimal one, then you start feeling like you're wasting your potential. And that fear was a very, very real fear for me. And I never really cared about, of course, you want to be heard and you want to be recognized for what you do so you can continue doing what you do. And I think we are social creatures that require love and require attention and require some sort of feedback to keep us moving, because we're one organism. So it's definitely playing into that, for sure, what you said. I agree with it to a certain extent. But I felt like I really need to become the best version of myself, because I've been gifted this life and I really should not waste it. On the way, of course, when people, you know, have tears because they listen to a beautiful melody that you wrote, or they send you messages, or they come to your concerts, or, you know, just participate in what you're creating, is very, very rewarding. But I think it was kind of more focused on that gift that we all experience, that is life, and that we need to cherish, and each one in their individual way.
Mm-hmm. And that debut album, you put that out on your label, Classified. What was the reasoning behind that? What did you feel like a label would bring to the table that maybe you couldn't at that time?
I think the label helped me to set deadlines to make it happen in the end. They helped me to make it happen, because there are certain timelines you need to respect. Otherwise your ideas never will see the light of day. It's like, okay, maybe if I wouldn't have worked with a label, this album would still be in the making. Right. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, mm-hmm. sometimes these frames help you to just get it done. And I remember that they were telling me, by the way, the label is run by Thomas and Julian from Parallel. And they just, you know, really believed in it. And it helped me to feel like, okay, it's my first album. I don't know if people will ever want to hear it. So to have two people that are constantly like firing you up and telling you, yeah, now like, okay, maybe if you put this song after this song, it could be really cool. Just brainstorming together, especially in a time where I felt quite alone in that process, because I could not really ping pong with other musicians, because where I was living, there were only a few musicians and they were all doing different, completely different styles of music. So going to Amsterdam, meeting them and just working with them, becoming friends, just really helped me also trust them to release this on their label.
Something that, you know, sticking with that album for a second that I thought was really interesting, or that I asked myself some questions about, is, you know, you're obviously not only a great producer, but you're also a great singer, songwriter. You know, you have an amazing voice. On that album, I feel like it's more on the second half of the album where you start using your voice as an instrument. And that kind of made me think of, you know, if you believe that on some instrumentals that you make, you know, your music is very much, you know, electronic, dance music, jazz inspired as well, of course. But on a pure instrumental track that you put together, do you feel like the instruments themselves are enough and don't need any layered vocals on top? And where do you make that decision? Like, when does an instrumental need additional vocal tracks that you add to them versus just having the instrumental kind of be the song in itself? Is there any strategy behind that, or is it more a gut feeling, or?
It's a bit of a rebellish attitude. Of what I got most props for when I was making music in the past was like girls coming up to me and telling me how much they love my voice, right? And then it puts you in this box of like, oh, the heartbreaking singing songwriter. I was like, I don't want to be in that box. And then I became really shy. At one point, I remember I was talking to our friend Alex. I was telling him, he was like, well, what, man, why aren't you singing anymore? What's going on? I was like, I don't know. I feel shy to sing. Maybe because, you know, like I just didn't want to be in that box. I didn't want girls to walk up to me and tell me anything about my voice. I wanted, you know, like the music to be in the focus kind of, and it made me feel really uncomfortable. And that specific style of that, like sad guy singing, you know, sad songs or whatever, it was just something I was done with. You know, I felt like, okay, it's time to discover something new, because I grew up with music in the past that was like a lot of songwriting stuff, a lot of guitar vocals only, or rock music, or there was always voice. There was always voice was the predominant element in the music I was listening to. And then I thought, okay, what if I just start diving deeper into instrumentation and using different instruments? And then I was so busy with that I didn't really work on my voice anymore. So at one point I was just like, okay, let's put the voice aside for a moment and then see. It will come back. And it did come back now. So I'm working on a lot of tracks now, like where I'm using my voice much more. I'm using my voice much more. And, you know, when I play shows, I took also very deep training now the last year with a coach, just to get to the level, you know, basically just adjusting the skill set. It's like one day you focus on the piano and you start diving really deep into the piano. Then you have to allocate your time to study music theory. And then you need to go deeper into music theory than music history. For example, if you want to also respect where it comes from, right? You don't want to just use and steal elements and not know what the hell you're doing. So it became this monster of like, just like this time consuming system, kind of like where you need to be wise about, okay, this is my top priority right now. And everything else follows. Yeah.
But so do you think there are particular songs that your voice would complement in a way? Like how do you choose when you sing on your songs and when not? Is there any way for you to explain that?
It all starts with how the idea, where the idea came from. If it came from a vocal top line or if it came from humming a melody, and then you just try to imagine, okay, where does it, on what instrument does it sound the best? And most of the time I decide that it sounds best on the piano. Sometimes certain background elements sound good on a specific synthesizer or a specific string instrument. And only rarely I realize that I really love the tone of my voice on a specific piece of music. But I think with, you know, upping the game with the setup in the studio or using better microphones, and then you really start like seeing or hearing nice resonances or harmonics in the voice or textures that you can add. And then it's like, okay, maybe I try to use my voice here. And I don't know if you know the song, I Wish I Met You Sooner, My Enemy, where it's like a completely full on vocal song. Mm-hmm. But it's also connected to the idea of having to write lyrics, right? Where I feel like I haven't mastered the technique to write lyrics and to phrase them well as a vocalist. So I never felt like I really have a powerful message lyrically compared to the more powerful messages that I have melodically. So that was where I made these decisions. I felt like that's definitely something I didn't have time to get into yet, you know? And there are so many people that work with songwriters, you know? Like everybody, I don't know actually if people know that, but artists like Billie Eilish, that seem like they're just producing out of their bedroom, they have a team. There are so many people that are just correcting, writing, rephrasing, rewriting, helping, you know, like perform certain lyrics as well. So it's not just like I'm in my home just writing lyrics. And I'm sure there are people that do that. And probably much more than I know. But there's the other side as well, where it seems like they're doing it alone, but there's like a whole setup behind it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you feel like is challenging for you about that? Is it to find inspiration to write down the lyrics? Or do you feel like what you've written down at the moment is a bit, I don't know, maybe too cheesy or too not really communicating anything? What is it about your writing that you don't particularly like?
So I just don't feel like, I feel I judge what I write all the time, you know, like lyrics that I write specifically, where it's just like, okay, I mean, we've heard that before. What is my message here? And then you get into this overthinking process, vortex, and it creates stress, and then I'm not creative. And I think it's literally comes down to phrasing. I really think that's when you listen to really good jazz tunes or any tune in general, when it's like, what makes this line so beautiful? It's like, it's because it's phrased in a very certain way and it's performed in that way. And it's not necessarily what is written down. So, like a lot of bullshit words and just phrase them nicely and suddenly they make much more sense. And they speak to the melody or speak with the melody. So yeah, I think I just don't trust myself yet enough with lyrics. Yeah. Or maybe it's too vulnerable. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not ready to share that level of vulnerability with the world. That might be a possibility.
But do you practice that? Do you try to practice that sometimes? Or do you just kind of leave it out and just not do it?
I'm practicing it now. So the last 8 months, I've been practicing. I've been having like daily routines, vocal routines, and I'm practicing it now. And I definitely, I'm very happy that I found out what the source of the problem is, or what made me dislike the lyrical output. But I don't know if I'm necessarily going to practice that as much as I practice other things that are much more important to me in terms of like when I need to perform, because it takes a lot of coordination to work on the setup that I'm working with. It's like, okay, you need to have this, you know, this fader here. You need to move this button. You need to hold this key. You have a foot pedal. You have a drum machine on the left. You need to be ready, to work with all these components, and then to master your voice, where you might be a little bit shy or scared or stressed out, or maybe actually, I have a very good answer to your question. One of the biggest factors, was that when I was playing in the club setups that I was playing at, it was really hard to involve, vocals, because the monitors on stage were very close to me. So it would always create feedback, and it was never the right volume. It was never the right amount of reverb. There was no sound engineer helping. So it became such a stressful task to sing live. So at one point I was like, okay, I'll do it later. And then it's just, you know, life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you've been doing this for many years now, and you've experienced a lot, and you went through ups and downs, and I'm wondering what advice would you give to other people that might think about starting a career in music? And with that, maybe what you wish you would have known about the music industry before starting a career in it?
I know it won't sound the way that I want it to sound, but don't listen to other people. Like, don't listen to other people's advice. I think in reality, nobody knows what's happening, right? It's like this ongoing process of discovery, exploration, and people that want to give you advice on what music is, or what music should be, or what music could be, are probably pulling it out of their ass, or doing it out of what... out of the wrong reasons in a way. I think there are so many rules that are set up that we can easily break, and that creates much more beauty. So that would be my first advice. Like, don't try to imitate someone, because like the time that I wasted most of my energy was when I was trying to sound like fill the gaps, right? And it was like, of course there's inspiration, but we are also so much products of our environment. So I grew up with music that I didn't choose to grow up with this music. It was part of my, you know, like I just heard it as part of my upbringing. And some of it I reject, and some of it I wanted to keep as a source of inspiration. And, you know, looking back, it would be amazing to build on that. But that would be the second thing. You are not only a product of your environment. Like, we are heavily influenced by our environment, but it's okay to grow out of that. It's okay to change. It's okay to try something new. And nobody should judge you for that. And my third advice would be to not let the creative stallion in your mind, you know, control you. It's like either, you know, it's either we're procrastinating or we're compulsive. It's nice to be somewhere in the middle, where when you feel something in your body telling you, hey, why don't you go to the piano and play? Then just do it. Don't just think about creating and beat yourself up that you're not doing it. I think that would be something that I would advise myself, to be honest. I spend so many hours of the day like beating myself up for not doing this or that, you know, but I'm thinking about doing it. Whereas like, if you're not doing it, don't think about it. And if you think about it, go do it. But, you know, don't be in that space of like, I think we're all familiar with it to a certain extent. And be prepared for change, I think. But don't be afraid of it. Just be prepared. You know, I think with AI and everything that's coming up in the future, a lot of people will lose their jobs, but maybe it will help us really rethink if we ever wanted jobs, right? Or if we wanted to actually just be creators of our own destiny, you know, and jobs just became a tool for that. So, I think don't be afraid. Be prepared and have fun and enjoy.
On that same subject, you know, people wanting to have a career and start a career in music, who are maybe your unsigned hypes, other artists that you've been following or artists that inspire you and that you believe deserve more attention, musicians that are still flying way too much under the radar? Do you have maybe one or two artists that you want to shout out here that people can check out?
For sure. So my friend Mark Alberto, who's playing saxophone and a variety of instruments and a fantastic composer, I would definitely recommend to check out Mark Alberto. And my homie from London that I had the pleasure to work with during the shoot of the Yamaha documentary in Barcelona, Junior Williams, a fantastic vocalist that you should definitely have on the show as well, to be honest, because it's very, very, very inspiring human being, very inspiring human beings, both of them. So definitely shout out to them.
What do you do this all for?
Man, it's interesting to hear that question now, because I really thought about this. And I realized one thing: whenever I face the music industry, and before you actually contacted me again, when you contacted me again, I felt invited to think about what the music industry is and if I'm even part of the music industry. So I literally looked up the definition of the music industry on the internet, because I was like, you know, I don't feel like I'm part of the music industry somehow, because I don't want to be in the system of we do this, and then the next goal is to sign with a major, and then the next goal is to play that festival, and then that festival and grow, and then have a million plays here, a million billion plays there, and like, you know, the old idea of success. And I realized that for me, success means to be able to constantly make music, like to constantly make music, to create an environment where I have the ability to wake up and make music. That's for me a big, big win in my life. And now what I'm doing it for, what I realize more and more, is that we are facing a lot of crazy, crazy conflicts in our lifetime. Like actually, like it's very, very intense to just witness and to feel like you can't do anything. But I realize that there are ways to do something, right? There are ways to make this world a bit better, to decorate the time we have. And I'm kind of starting to find out how to improve at least my direct environment and also feel inspired by my direct environment. So I think I'm doing it for inspiration, for the sake of creating and for the sake of expressing and allow other people to express themselves and creating this peaceful bubble in a way, where I hope the bubble will be so big that it will encompass the entire world. Instead of just being with a few people. Yeah.
Mahfood, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Miles, thank you so much. It was beautiful. What an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you, brother.
This was Unsigned Hype episode 21 with Mahfood. The track you're hearing right now is Mahfood's song Childhood. Make sure to support Mahfood by checking out his music and following him on social media. And for your weekly Unsigned Hype, make sure to also follow us on Spotify and Instagram. All the links are in the show notes below.